Amen. Before I forget, we always want to give honor where honor is due. And just a few days ago, our very own Randy Davis, our Connect minister, celebrated 4 years of ministry here, and we're grateful for him. I have lots of jokes, but we want to honor him today. So we love you, Randy. We love you. I know you do. Well, Jesus tells a story, actually three stories in Luke 15. If you have a Bible, I invite you to turn there. I do encourage you to bring your Bible. It helps you to kind of look at it. It's great on the screen, but it helps you kind of look at it and see it. But he tells these three stories, all with very similar messages. The first one we covered a few weeks ago. This man has 100 sheep, one disappears, and he goes after that sheep, leaving the 99, and he finds that sheep. They have a big party. Then last week, we looked at a woman who had 10 coins. She had saved these coins, and she loses one, and she gets out her broom and sweeps her dirt floor and finally finds the lost coin, and she has a party. Today, we're going to look at the most famous of these three stories, one that even if you haven't been in church before, you've probably heard the term prodigal, someone who's gone astray. You've heard about the prodigal son or the story of the prodigal son, and that's what we're going to look at today. So for those of you that have been in church a long time, I want to invite you to sort of put a new lens on today. Ask God to help you see it a little differently, maybe for the first time. And if you're not familiar with the story, it has great impact. So Luke 15, beginning in verse 11, Jesus is telling a story about a family. And it says this, and he said, that's Jesus speaking about this family. There was a man who had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of property that is coming to me. And he divided his property between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all that he had, and he took a journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into his fields to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate. And no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread? But I perish here with hunger. I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion. And he ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, bring quickly the best robe and put it on him. And put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. And bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to celebrate. Now his older son was in the field. And as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf. Because he has received him back safe and sound. But he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him. But he answered his father, look, these many years I have served you and never disobeyed your command. And yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fattened calf for him. And he said to him, son, you are always with me. And all that I have, all that is mine is yours. And it was fitting to celebrate and be glad. For this your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found. This is a, everything Jesus says is perfect, but this story is amazing. Because it's a story of a man who had two sons. And often when we hear about this story of the prodigal son, we naturally think of the younger son who was a fool, a dummy. What are you thinking kind of a kid? We think about him. Like, why would you do that? But the story is not just about one son, it's about two sons. It's about a father who had two sons. And Jesus wants not only his audience in that day to understand this very important fact, but he wants us to understand it. That this is not a story about a bad son and a good son. It's about two lost sons. One just happens to be a little closer. And sometimes as we think about our own lives, we think about all that we've done. And if you've grown up in church and sort of been on the straight and narrow your whole life, you might identify with the older brother. If you have a wild testimony, you might recognize the younger brother a little bit. And you didn't make all the greatest decisions in life. That may be who you identify with. But this is a story about two lost sons and a father who refuses to stop loving either one of them. A father who refuses to stop loving them. The challenge for us is that lostness, being far from God, is sometimes easier to spot in certain people than other people. And that's the case here. Lostness is easy to spot in one of the sons. It's not so easy to spot in the other one. And Jesus tells this story for a very specific reason, because the audience he's speaking to is lost. Some of them, it's easy to spot their lostness. They're tax collectors and sinners. Others, it's not so easy to spot. They're self-righteous religious leaders. And so he tells this story of these two lost sons. One who is reckless and foolish and truthfully mean. He's cruel. Because what does he do? He comes to his dad. He's bold. We'll give him that. He's bold and he comes to his dad. He goes to his father and he says, "Father, give me my share of the inheritance. Give me my share of the inheritance." Now, that's rude, we might say, but in the ancient culture, it was devastating. It was devastating for the father, because what the son was saying is, "Father, I wish you were dead. I wish you were dead." Because that's when he would receive the inheritance. And in this case, because of the way culture worked in ancient Israel, he would have gotten one third. The older brother would get two thirds. He would get one third of his father's inheritance. And so it says, "Father, give me my inheritance." And unlike today, where you might just head over to the bank and pull out some cash, that wasn't so easy then. Because most of their wealth was tied up in land and animals. And so what did that father have to do? He had to either sell some cattle, sell a couple of goats, as we see later on, maybe even sell a portion of his property so that the son could then go and live how he wanted. But he did it. Shockingly, the father says, "Yes, okay." There's one line in here. Look in verse 13. "Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had." I wonder what it was like between the conversation, "Give me my inheritance," and "not many days later." I would love to know what the family dynamic was in those few days or weeks, whatever it was. I imagine it was pretty chilly around the dinner table. I'm sure it wasn't a lot of fun. And so he got as quickly as he could all of his stuff and said, "Okay, I'm out and I'm going to go to the far country. I'm I'm going to go where I can have freedom, where I can live like I want, lead like I want, do what I want, and not be under this environment. And what he did in that one decision to say, Father, give me my inheritance, is he traded family for freedom, quote unquote. He traded belonging for pleasure. And he traded refuge for want. He didn't know it yet, but that's what he did. He made a trade. And he traded all the things that mattered for things that would leave him empty. He wasn't there yet, but that's what he did. With one decision that I'm sure had been building over time, because he wanted freedom. And for a while, it worked. For a while, he got freedom. For a while, he got pleasure. For a while, he got friends and fun. He got all the things that he wanted. He got it for a while until he didn't. That's how it always works. It's amazing to me how the young guy with all the money spends it all, and then a famine occurs. God has a sense of humor. Like that, God's going to put you in exactly the spot you need to be for you to listen to him. And that's what he does for this young man. It was working great until it didn't work. And so soon the money's gone, the friends are gone, and what is the young man doing? He's feeding pigs. The absolute worst job an Israelite, a Hebrew, could do is feed pigs. And it's not even that that was his job. What was worse is his job actually didn't even pay the bills. Because he's feeding pigs, and what does he say? He goes, I'd like to eat the pods they eat. You got to be desperate. You got to be desperate to eat what pigs want to eat. I don't know how many of you have dogs, cat people, we pray for you. But if you have a dog, we have dogs. Like, we don't give our dogs people food. People who visit our house sometimes do, and they don't get asked back. No, I'm kidding. You know why? Because dogs need to have the dog food. People have people food. I don't want to eat Bentley and Milo's food. I don't want to eat it. But perhaps if I got desperate enough, I would want to eat it. That's where he was. Because his job didn't pay him enough to actually buy his own food. That's how bad it was. The guy had everything, and then he didn't. And now he's trying to eat what is thrown in the pig pen. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. And so I imagine it didn't take long for him to come to his senses. And so finally, he's broken enough. He's humbled enough. And he realizes, wait a second. The guys who work for my father, they actually can eat. They have a livable wage. Maybe my father will allow me to come back as an employee. An employee. Maybe I can work for him. Not as a son, not as a restored member of the family, but simply tolerated enough to get a job. That's what he's looking for in this moment, to be tolerated. That's his expectation, is to be tolerated. I just need to survive. I need to survive. Pay my bills, eat. There's something very important about this part of the story. And as Jesus shares this story, he doesn't say much about the detail of his frivolous living, probably on purpose. We don't need to highlight our sin. Right? That's not what God is about, highlighting our sin. But what he does point to is the boy's recognition, this young man's recognition of his state, of his current condition. He's not going back to the father because he thinks he's good. He's going back to the Father because he knows he's terrible. He's the worst. He's messed up royally. He comes home. He wants to go home because he's desperate. He realizes that life on his own with his own vices and his own choices was a train wreck. And so my only hope is to return to the Father. My only hope is to return to the place that I should have been all along, to go home. He's desperate. I'm not sure that he missed the farm, but he missed his father. And so he comes up with this great speech, which I'm sure all of us have come up with great speeches when we've messed up. And you rehearse it over and over and over in your mind. I'm going to say this. If they say this, then I'll say this. Surely they'll listen. He planned his confession, makes the decision to return home. But that's one of the first beautiful parts of this passage. This is where grace begins. When he finally comes to the position where I'm going to go home. I'm going to go home. It's when grace starts to show up. Because before he can reach the house, what happens? The Father sees him. The Father sees him. This is an important, important detail. Because the Father has been watching probably every day down, maybe they're up on a little incline, a little hill, and the road comes up from the village. And he's been watching every day down that road to see, is the son coming? Every day he's watching, waiting, praying, hoping that his son would return. And so when the son is a long way off, I don't know what a long way off is. That's different for everybody. But a long way off, he sees him. And he doesn't wait for the son. Some of us would wait for the son. We'd be tapping our foot like this, hands crossed or in our pockets like, come on, crawling back, kid. No, that's not what he does. What does he do? He humiliates himself in front of his employees, in front of his family, maybe in front of the villagers as he picks up his robe and begins to run towards his son. This is an event that older men in ancient culture did not do. Older men did not run after people. Surely after someone who has humiliated them already. He humbles himself. He shames himself in front of those that are around so that he can run and embrace his son. And he grabs him and he hugs him and he kisses him. And the son is like, Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. And before he can finish this great rehearsed speech that was really beautiful and contrite, the father takes it. The father is the one who took the shame. The father is the one who humiliated himself so that he could reach the son. He does the unthinkable. He humiliates himself for the sake of his child. That's what he does. And so it doesn't matter what the child says, what he does. He's already taken the burden. He's taken it. And when he embraces his son and kisses him and hugs him and then declares to his servants, this is a fun part of the story. You probably didn't even think about it, but I am. Like those servants, they had to be moving too. Like they had to run to the city, to the town. Like they had to follow the dad because he turns to them. It doesn't say 2 days later, an hour later. No, the servants are right there with him. So here's the dad picking up his robe, running down. And what are the servants doing? Oh, here he goes. They're chasing him down because he turns them. Get the robe, get the shoes, get the ring, get the calf. We're going to have a party. And I'm sure they're like, gosh, couldn't you have waited till you walked back up and just told us up here? But we came all the way down. Those are things I think about. All that's for free today. But they're an important part of the story. Because the dad, the father, he doesn't wait for an explanation. He doesn't wait for the confession. He simply wants to celebrate that his son who is dead is now alive. And he wants everyone to celebrate with him. There's no lecture. There's no I told you so. There's no like, yes, you're an idiot. There's none of that. It's welcome home. Ring and robe and shoes. Can you imagine? Shoes is the odd one of this list. The robe, I understand. The ring, I understand. But the shoes. Perhaps this young man had walked from the far country without shoes. I don't know if you're a barefoot kind of person, but imagine walking from here to Alvin barefooted. You would not want to do that. You wouldn't want to do that. So imagine if it was across town or across rugged terrain. And the father had enough compassion for his son to say, not just the robe that you're part of the family and the ring, not just a party with the calf, but the shoes. I'm going to meet your need in the moment. That's what the father does. It's a beautiful picture of the forgiveness of Jesus Christ. What he does for us, what he has done for us. That he humbled himself, took on humanity, and then humbled himself even more. He died for us, not just any ordinary death, but death on a cross to pay the penalty of our sins. He took our shame upon himself. And this is what he's communicating through this beautiful, wonderful story of the Father running after the wayward, lost, prodigal son and embracing him and welcoming him home. Because Jesus, like the Father in this story, restores us before we can ever finish our confession. He embraces us. That's the beauty of grace. He says, you were lost, but now you're found. And I imagine in this moment, when he gets to that part and talks about the fattened calf, and we're going to celebrate because my son was dead and now he's alive, the audience in the first century was like, wow. Unbelievable. Like, this is unimaginable that someone would express love in such an amazing, dramatic way to restore his son. They had to be like, oh. It's like, you know, that end of the movie, like, yeah. And that would have been great. This would have been a great ending to the story right here. You were lost, but now you're found. And they began to celebrate. They walk off in the sunset. The camera pans back as the music starts playing. But an amazing ending to the story. But it wasn't the end. In my own imagination, I think that Jesus took a dramatic pause right there. And then he continued. And he said, now his older son, well, who cares about him? And he talks about this older son who is in the field. And he came, and he was far enough in the field. That tells you this man was pretty wealthy. Far enough away that he couldn't hear the music and dancing. And he gets close enough to where he can hear the music and the dancing, and now we've got a problem. There's a problem. And the older son knows it. Because this son, he never left. At least physically, he never left. But he was probably gone long time ago. He worked, he obeyed, he stayed. And when his younger brother comes home, he explodes. All these years, I've served you. I've never disobeyed. How many of you ever said that to your parents? That was the legitimate question. I'm glad none of you raised your hand. You're probably lying in that moment, but it's okay. I've never disobeyed. And you never threw a party for me. You never threw a party for me. You listen to his words that he says. He doesn't say, I love you, I care for you. He says, no, I obeyed, I served you. He is not a son, he's an employee. That's his perspective. Not a son, an employee. I've done all of these things. I've performed well for you, Father. Where's my party? I've performed well. And in this, he describes his lostness. It's not a lostness of extravagance and frivolous nature and wasting money. No, it's very subtle. His lostness is respectable. We might even say his lostness is religious, because it's very much about rules and regulations. He thinks that geography equals righteousness, that if I'm close, then I'm righteous. He thinks that obedience earns love. He believes that he deserves more than grace. He deserves special treatment. And in that case, he's as lost as his brother, because this is the lostness of self-righteousness, pride, arrogance, the lostness of rule-keeping without relationship. And once again, the father does the unexpected, the shameful thing. He leaves his own party. He leaves his party as the host, and he goes out to his son. And he doesn't lecture him. He doesn't cajole him. He just pleads with him. Please come in. He doesn't say in that moment, look, I've already done this once. You're out. Like, go. No, he doesn't disown him. He doesn't lecture him. He simply pleads with him. Look, you are my son, and everything I have is yours, and it always will be. But listen, your brother was dead, and now he's alive. You weren't overlooked. You weren't abandoned. You weren't unloved. You just simply never asked about what a real relationship is. You just followed the rules. That's what he's saying. Like, you were always with me. Your brother was dead, and now he's alive. The tragedy is the older son doesn't know how to receive grace. He only knows the rules. He only knows performance. He only knows earning his way. And that's how Jesus ends the story. Like, really? Jesus, why? Why couldn't we end with celebrate, music, dancing, party? Why would you end on this older brother complaining about his younger brother and his dad? Why would you do that? And the reason why is because the people listening to the story, those tax collectors and sinners, they knew immediately, we're the younger brother. There was a group in that audience who needed to hear about the older brother, because that's what they were. The Pharisees, the religious leaders, the ones who thought they had to earn their place. They thought because they had all the trappings of religious activity that they were in, and their pride had blinded them, and they missed it. And so I wonder, as you and I think about this very familiar story, I want to remind you that sometimes lostness is easy to spot, and sometimes it's hard. Because those that seem to be the most righteous are sometimes self-righteous, and pride is their downfall. One ran away, one stayed, one rebelled, one resented. And sometimes we get in that same trap. And so I want to invite you to consider this morning what Jesus has done for you. That he's humiliated himself. He's chased after you so that you would be in a relationship with him for eternity. He humbled himself to embrace you, to love you, to care for you, to give you peace and forgiveness and joy, to make you know, help you to know that you are a part of his family. That's what he did for us on the cross. And he constantly is chasing after us, not to chastise and discipline and tell us how terrible we are, no, but to love and embrace us and to discipline us in love and grace and mercy. As one writer put it this way, she said, Jesus is the one who leaves heaven to find the reckless. Jesus is the one who confronts the self-righteous. Jesus is the one who absorbs shame so that we can come home. So the question isn't so much which son are you, which child are you? The question that we have to answer is, have we or will we receive the Father's invitation to come home? To come home. Maybe you're in a season of life where it's easy to spot your recklessness. Maybe you're in a season of life where you hide it pretty well, but God is still calling you to come home. Maybe there's someone in your life that's far from God and their lostness is easy to spot, and God's put you in their life. It's the whole point of the One series. God's put you in their life to be a little Christ. That's what a Christian is, little Christ. That you are to pursue them and encourage them and love them and share with them what it means to come home to the Father. Will you come home? Because the kingdom is about celebration. It's about joy. Because grace isn't just for those that wander away. It's for those of us that have been close the whole time. Grace is for those who are far away and those who never leave. But the invitation stands for all of us, and the invitation stands for those that are in your life. Come in. The celebration has begun. That's what I want us to be about, celebrating life change, celebrating the one who is lost and is found, one who is dead and is now alive. That's what the church is about, celebrating things that are alive, people that have come home to the Father, who have received the love of Jesus. That's what I want us to be about. So let's celebrate. Will you pray with me?